It's Wednesday, July 15th, 7/15/2019. Woo!
It's coming up on Prime Day. Are you primed for that?
Our Twitch stream should be.
Why is...
Because Twitch Prime subscriptions for free on Twitch.
I don't think you get like an extra one for Prime Day or anything, do you?
I don't know. Last year they had a promotion of some kind.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that. Maybe we should do a special Twitch stream that day. Anyway, some other people are planning a special event for Prime Day.
Engadget says that Amazon staff will strike during Prime Day over working conditions. They're unhappy with quotas and a reluctance to hire permanent workers. Yeah, so I don't know. I wonder if this even, like, Jeff Bezos doesn't, not only does he not care, this is just going to hasten the robot takeover.
Yeah. Well, they did this last year. Or was it, no, it was Black Friday they did it. And it didn't really amount to anything. Of course, you know, the Amazon logistical network is so massive that one cell striking at any given time means nothing. Yeah. You know? I mean, the machine can just bypass that cell. If your package is already in that warehouse, maybe you get it a day late, but probably not even that.
They're going to dispatch a busload of like Terminator robots to just come and take over the entire warehouse.
Now, you mentioned the robot revolution and how quickly he's going to get rid of these, you know, filthy union workers who want, you know, bathroom breaks and air conditioning. And he's going to bring in the robots. Now, that's kind of already happening. And Amazon knows what a PR disaster that's going to be. And Jeff Bezos has three words for those people. Learn to code. And don't flag me for hate speech. He literally said that.
Amazon pledges $700 million to teach its workers to code. This is a Wired article. And I really... I mean, that's good. But what percentage of those workers are going to successfully be able to learn to code?
Yeah. Especially when you think about, there's a lot of those, people will retire and go live the RV life that Krista talks about but will never commit to. And they just, like, nomad their way around the country from fulfillment center to fulfillment center. Do you think those people are really going to pick up
coding?
IT? And mm-hmm. If they do, that destroys their RV lifestyle.
Yeah. Some people want this kind of a, I want to say that people want like the bad aspects of the job. Some people are doing it because it's an easy job and it's a job where you can be nomadic. So there are some positives there, but it seems like for those workers, it would be a better use of their time to, you know, a tradesman like a traveling plumber would probably be more successful because everybody everywhere needs plumbing service.
But you got to get like licensed and bonded.
Oh, that's true.
So the local regulations will kill you if you try to do something like that.
I guess you could maybe be an apprentice for something. You could go to your local plumbing shop and be like, hey, I'm here for the summer HVAC rush.
I think that would be tough. With Amazon, I think the simplicity of it is, you know, the work is there anytime you need it. So you can just sort of, you can come and go. Anyway, they have the program that is like a 90-day program. They let you do it for free, and it's supposed to teach you the basics of IT. And I think they have another one for programming.
This would be kind of cool, though, if this is basically a way to find a way to promote people out of the warehouse. Like, not just for IT stuff, but literally anything the company might need.
Well, it's not that they're trying to promote them out of the warehouse. It's trying to... They're promoting them out of the way of the robots.
$700 million... is probably a good buy considering like how much the PR spin and marketing and advertising would cost to try to turn that story around.
And if you pull 10% of those people into your workforce and you know that they're trained specifically on your equipment, then probably, you know.
Neat.
I'm saying 10% of those people will actually be excellent workers for your robot empire eventually. You alluded to this one, YouTube. This is one of those things where this reminds me of when Google removed the, like, directly view this image from Google Images. It's a pointless, arms race type of thing to do. It's not going to last, and it's just simply to appease the copyright trolls.
I thought you were going to say when Google removed the ability to get your subscriptions as an RSS feed. But TechDirt has the article to say that YouTube is beginning to block stream ripping sites. So if you have a YouTube playlist or a YouTube video that you would like to have an MP3 version of, they've actually started blocking the sites and tools that do that.
One site, who did not want to be mentioned by name, said they'd already worked around it with a series of proxies. So it's not going to last long term, but this lets Google say, well, we tried, so...
To the rights holders.
Yeah, sorry. Turns out that information, once it's sent out, cannot be protected. That's a weird how that works. But the copyright people cannot get their head around that. T-Mobile has angered some of its people, as all the phone companies did, by selling location data to prisons and bounty hunters and things like that.
Twice after they told people they would stop.
And you think to yourself, well, that seems like a slam dunk case, right? Well, maybe not.
T-Mobile says it cannot be sued by its users because of a forced arbitration clause. So I want to hear from old hipster dude that's always like trying to be the cool dude. It's like, this is not cool, dude. What are you doing?
Is that an advertising
campaign? John Leguizamo. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He's the CEO. He's like, look, I'm always wearing jeans and a suit jacket and just...
Jack boots.
Yeah, it's just, this is, we can't be sued because of forced arbitration. So T-Mobile is saying, no, no, no.
Now, this arbitration is built into the agreement that you agreed to when you bought your plan. It, by law, you cannot force people to do this. But if you wanted to opt out of it, you had to read all the way to the end of the user agreement, call an 800 number, and go through some god-awful process to opt out of it, which literally no one has ever done. So... these people are probably screwed. Sad. A lot of people, well, I don't know about a lot of people, some people lamented the loss of Deep Nude, which really, it wasn't, it didn't show naked women against their will. It superimposed the head of women onto other nude images.
Could have also been called auto Photoshop. And
yeah, which people have been making fake nudes of celebrities since Photoshop has existed. I mean, it's not a new thing, but we've seen this previously with other things where when AI makes something really easy, then people lash out against it, yeah. Which is interesting. And it's so controversial that GitHub has done something rather extreme.
Motherboard has, GitHub has removed the open source versions of Deep Nude. So the creator of Deep Nude shuttered the app and digitally undressed women, and multiple people uploaded their own versions to GitHub, but GitHub has removed all of those. So, Microsoft owns GitHub. I feel like that's sort of a factor here.
Now, GitHub does have a policy about how nudity can be artistic, but if things are pornographic, they might be against the terms of service. Now, this AI, I think, has all that stuff in a data set, right? All those images yeah. that it uses. So technically it does contain nudity. But is that pornography?
It's a training set for AI, first and foremost, so and, maybe?
But nudity is not. I mean, pornography has to be the act of sex, right? And none of this would be.
I don't know.
So.
Yeah, it's probably a... it's probably the controversial thing. If it was just like...
yeah.
Here's a set of clothed people, and you can put somebody's head on somebody else's body. Again, we're finally entering, like, there's the sea change that I'm always talking about in AI is when I can take a movie like Lord of the Rings and substitute, you know, Danny DeVito for every character. We're getting there. We're very close.
How about when you pull up to your favorite fast food chain to get your, you know, whatever you get, to get your, what is that coffee that you're addicted to?
Oh, the Panera hazelnut coffee.
Is that what you got over there?
Yes. Yeah, the hazelnut coffee. I don't know what it is. Like, I'm not normally a coffee person, but that's some damn fine coffee.
Well, pretty soon, you might pull up to Panera, and they've got that hazelnut brewing before you even speak a word.
Yeah.
Because they're going to know. based on your license plate.
I'm already in the database for sure. Fast food chains consider trying license plate recognition in drive-thrus. This is not really super surprising. A lot of this technology already exists in commercial stores, especially like high-end commercial stores. They are already tracking you. There's cameras, your face. You go into like the high-end store at the mall, they know who you are. They know what's up.
Well, McDonald's just recently bought an AI company, and they talked about how part of their new thing is personalized drive-through experience. So when you pull up, they might offer you a deal that other people don't get just because they know what kind of customer you are.
Yeah. Well, imagine a future where all of this is a little bit more tightly integrated. Your Google Assistant, you know, pops up and it's basically, hey, Google Assistant, I'm feeling like, you know, McDonald's. How busy is McDonald's? Can you get me an Egg McMuffin in like 10 minutes? And the Google Assistant makes the little beeping noises and is like, yes, I can do that.
Well, but they've already got the app, so.
Well, you wouldn't, I mean, you just talk to it. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to hit a button or dig through anything or click through endless menus. It's just like, this is me. I want this. And it's like, all right.
They've also mentioned that, and this is a little scary because, I mean, you know, we just talked about all the data leaks, but possibly putting a credit card on file. Oh, yeah. So that your drive-through experience is like you drive up and you say the usual, and then you drive through and they give you your food and you're out. You minimize the interface with the humans.
Again, if the AI were trustworthy, if I trusted Google with everything, that would actually be really awesome because my AI, it's like, hey, you know, the McDonald's AI would like to authorize a transaction for $11. Do you okay that? And if it's in the voice of my AI and not the McDonald's AI, it's like, yes, sounds good, helper bot, 5,000. Go ahead and authorize that. I would feel better about that type of a credit card transaction. And it's all in the way that it's presented to the end user, regardless of what's happening mechanically under the hood.
And then your helper bot gives you a government mandated 5-minute lecture on trans fats. Yeah. And your insurance bot comes in. It's like, really? Really, bro?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we talked about robocalls and how Ajit Pai is pledging to strike them down, although I'm still getting them. AT&T has decided that they are simply going to block all fraud calls. But there's a catch.
It's only for new customers. Existing customers are going to have to wait. This is code for the system is not perfect, and we've got to work out some bugs. And so new customers are going to be the guinea pig, while we're also telling them that if they switch from an existing carrier to us, they get the cool new stuff.
Yeah, and I think there are definitely people out there who would be willing to switch to get rid of robocalls.
Yes.
So probably could convert some people. I can't imagine that you couldn't just turn that on for everybody with a flick of a switch. I mean,
well, what's going to happen is a lot of automated calls are legit going to be blocked. Like Anthem and Humana and those companies are going to just shutter a whole bunch of people's health insurance, and they're going to be like, "Oops, guess our call was blocked. We tried to call you."
Again, we need to move so that anything done over the phone is non-binding.
Yeah,
you're going to have to do it a different way.
Have to do it electronically. I mean, it should be done online anyway because that's way more secure than the phone and easier. Except for old people that would struggle with that.
Now, I knew that you added this story. Not only because I added all the other stories, but because this is a rabbit hole AMD story. And only an AMD shield would have snuck this in.
Anandtech has the story. It's like, no, AMD still is not enabling PCI Express 4 on 300 and 400 series boards. This is by Ryan Smith at Anandtech. And so some of the, you know, the new boards are out, the 570 boards, and they're kind of expensive compared to previous gen boards. And some companies like Asus have started enabling PCI Express 4 on some of their older motherboards, but that there are actually a lot of engineering challenges for that, and it will be a bad user experience for everybody but the most like in the know people that would try to run PCI Express 4 on an older board, because the signaling is very problematic on older boards unless you have things like redrivers and stuff like that. And so AMD is saying, we don't want to take the chance on a bad customer experience, just don't enable it, we've done the tests, just don't do it. And Asus is like, well, we'll leave it on, and if it works for you, great, and if not, well, here's where to turn it off. And I'm kind of on the fence. I kind of get what AMD is doing, but I kind of get what Asus is doing too. So it's a mess either way.
Speaking of engineering failure and bad news for early adopters, the new Raspberry Pi, if you ran out and bought it, you're gonna be kicking yourself.
Raspberry Pi admits to a faulty USB-C design on the Pi 4. I expect this will be fixed in a future board revision, says the creator. So if you have a USB-C charger that is intelligent, it does not shake hands correctly with the USB-C design on the Raspberry Pi 4. It's down to like a resistor. There's a couple of like 5.7K resistors that should be in the design. It's in the reference design. They changed it, and I don't know why. There's a royalty-free reference design for how you implement a USB-C charger.
They didn't do it.
Well, they took two down to one. They were literally trying to save 1 cent. I mean, you got to imagine, what's the margin on a Raspberry Pi?
It's $35.
You're making money any way you can. So they probably thought, well, this is brilliant. It's going to save us a lot of money. And they tested it with all the cables they had in the office, and it was fine.
Yeah. Lower end USB-C cables are fine. But if you try to use like your laptop charger on it, it's not going to work.
They do mention the one it comes with is okay. So you're not going to have a non-functional Raspberry Pi, but you might have like a really nice long cable that just mysteriously doesn't work. That's why. We have talked about the ubiquity of the streaming service and how the value that was Netflix is being torn apart by all. Everybody's creating their own. Everybody wants to be Netflix, and they're clawing back all of their content. The Friends was the big one.
Yeah,
that was announced this week. That apparently there are people who just watch Friends in the office over and over and over on Netflix. Netflix Aspies. And hey, you know, I got no problem with that. You know, whatever makes you happy. But these companies who have previously sold those IPs are like, wait a minute. I mean, people just sit and watch this over and over? We want it back. And they claw it back and they create their own thing. And there's another one.
Warner Media confirms its Netflix rival will be called HBO Max. The soon-to-be exclusive streaming home for Friends is coming in spring of 2020. I hope this fails spectacularly.
I don't know. They mentioned the stuff that it has. A lot of this stuff, I'm out of touch. You know, I'll be the first to admit it. But a lot of this stuff I've never heard. Okay, we got Batwoman, Katie Keene, Riverdale, no idea, Greg Berlanti, and Reese Witherspoon. Oh, Reese Witherspoon. She's a big hitter in Hollywood these days. You ever hear the dash cam footage of her getting a DUI? Or her husband's getting a DUI. And she's like, do you know who I am? DC Entertainment, TBS, Turner Classic Movies, Adult Swim. I didn't realize it. So does that mean, oh yeah, Cartoon Network. So, Looney Tunes, oh man. If they have the whole Looney Tunes library.
We need the dark Looney Tunes.
I might be tempted. Yeah, you got to give me Song of the South or I'm not interested. I need the purity of that. Oil is evil, as we've learned. It's a dark, horrible future that we keep using oil. Everybody's going to die from climate change. And the tech companies don't just use oil for transportation and things like that. They got to make plastic. Got to make things out of plastic, and plastic is bad. Plastic kills sea turtles. So what are you going to do about it? Well, Panasonic has a plan.
Panasonic is going to tap plants to develop green appliances. High production costs concerns shift away from petroleum-based plastics. So anybody that's been doing 3D printing with PLA, plant-based plastics are the future, or something. I mean, there's actually a lot of problems. But Panasonic is adopting them for their appliances, so that's good.
But they're both the future and not the future. Because being made of plants, they do biodegrade.
Yeah.
So they talk about how if you have, let's say, a refrigerator, a plant-based refrigerator, you just throw it away. Which, this scares me because it's definitely going to lend the planned obsolescence thing more.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's going to be literally no. It's like, okay, pull out the housing that houses all of the electronics and then just chuck that away and we'll send you a new one.
Well, can you imagine, you know, in the future, like 100 or 200 years from now, will we ever enter a point where you're assigned your fridge at birth and that's your fridge from, you know, from the time you're born until the time that you die? Because the technology has progressed to the point that, like, we're not inventing a new, better fridge every generation.
I don't think so, because then, I mean, we would have to get to your fantasy Star Trek space communism where companies aren't competing anymore, because there's always going to be somebody finding a reason to sell you a new fridge.
That's crazy. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'm thinking about, like, heirloom furniture. Like, I've got a few bookshelves that, like, my great-grandfather made, and it's like, as far as I'm concerned, they're the pinnacle of bookshelf technology.
Yeah, but a bookshelf really isn't technology. It's just a box.
It's a box with some shelves and maybe some carvings, and it's like
more of a shape.
It's like, wow, wow, the person that made this is a craftsman. I want to say that about a fridge. Like, this person has made the most amazing fridge ever.
We got to hope that eventually we'll have cooling that uses less and less bad stuff, right? Mm. Or even the power, the way that you power it. Like, power efficiency, I guess, is the only really new thing that we're gaining right now.
Yeah.
But if that keeps getting better, then you're always going to want a more efficient one, right?
Well, it was kind of a black hole there. I mean, some of the early fridges that used insanely terrible things for the environment were actually fairly efficient. There was a dark time there where we realized it was killing the planet, and we used worse materials that used a lot more energy. And only in the last 15 years, things have actually gotten better again.
Well, yeah. I mean, leaded gasoline was great. Not for people.
Not for people.
But for cars. This story, this cracked me up because, like, so few people care about this. And then I love, you know, just scroll down and show the actual solution.
Goodbye, aberration. A physicist has solved a 2,000-year-old optical problem.
Go ahead.
So this is exciting because any lens that you buy for cameras and whatever is going to have aberrations. And that's because light enters like the side of the lens, and you gotta correct for that. And so you see on a lens that it's got so many aspherical elements, and the aspherical elements are empirically correcting for aberrations produced from the spherical lens. And this has been a problem since like the time of Galileo. This physicist has figured out mathematically how to produce a lens, this is going to be great for mass production, that does not suffer from aberration. It's a mathematical solution to the aberration problem. So we can have lenses that are completely aberration free, which also should mean that lenses get way cheaper.
It was kind of interesting though, because they had this fellow here, they kind of gave him the credit for it. But then they explained in the article that he called up another guy and bullied him into actually solving the problem. I have a picture of that guy.
Yeah, well, it was like, I need your help to work on this problem. I think I've got a solution here. Let's see if this is actually, you know, this is a thing that actually makes sense. And it turns out, yeah, it does. So we should be able to have very low-cost, aberration-free lenses for photography and videography very soon.
Woo. Will people still complain?
Yes, absolutely. No doubt.
Being out of focus sometimes.
No doubt.
Oh, moving on to social media. It has, you know, we talk about the dark times of YouTube, and we are in the darkest of times.
We really are.
And one of the worst things about YouTube right now is the copyright claim, because no matter how long your video is or how short the violation is, the proposed violation, you aren't told anything about it. It's just like, hey,
you may not be.
You're wrong. Go fix it. And you're like, well, what do I need to fix? Well, now maybe that's going to get a little better.
They've said that they're going to make it easier for creators to deal with copyright claims by forcing manual copyright claims to identify the specific time or times in the video where there's a copyright problem. And so if they do that at the time they're making the claim, you can elect to snip that part out or mute it or whatever to address the issue really quickly. A lot of big creators get these kind of manual claims, and it's like the reasons for it are tenuous at best. And so it's a situation where the big creator's like, all right, just cut that part of the video out. I don't even want to argue about it. Just move on. And so YouTube thinks that if this system, this will better define like what the copyright violation is. And so if you have a big, like a record label or copyright cartel that is continually abusing their access, then maybe this would be more evidence that they are abusing their access and would have their access cut.
But also on the plus side, I think the good thing this is going to do is it's going to force those people to make their reporting systems, which are just pure AI, better. It's going to be harder for them to shotgun out those things, because now they're going to have to provide more information. And they're going to, it's not, if it hears 30 seconds of a song in the background of a restaurant where you're filming in, then they're going to have to like actually map out how long it is. And if it's broken up by other noises, that's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Facebook is good at sort of shaping the narrative. We've certainly seen that. And they've got the AI. They've got the warehouses full of people who are watching the horrible things to try to get rid of them. But it turns out they have two very special programs. What do those programs deal with? They deal with news about Facebook.
So Bloomberg has an article about how Facebook fought fake news about Facebook. Polling data and secretive projects Storm Chaser and Night's Watch helped the social media giant track public sentiment and respond to it. So the headline says that this is fake news about Facebook, but these projects were absolutely about tracking real news about Facebook as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think fake news necessarily entered into this. But it just shows how good they are at not only identifying when there's news about them, but then trying to take control and shape how that's interpreted.
It was almost like you would see a news story that was like, Facebook is literally, you know, Facebook's executives literally feast on the blood of young children or whatever. And then they would get a thing in the newsroom and it'd be like, all right, we've got the next thing that we're going to have a public thing. He's like, now you may have heard that we eat the blood of young children, but that's not true because this, this, and this. And it's like, only a crazy person would think this. And so they really just subtly change the way that they present information to head a lot of that stuff off even before it becomes really widely known. It also gave them great intel on what things were leaking out and what things weren't. Because, you know, remember Zuckerberg was saying, oh, you know, this memo may come to light, or he was aware of this other memo, Cambridge Analytica. And so they could be on top of exactly what the media knew to respond to some of that preemptively and to appear to be very forthcoming with things, but not actually be more forthcoming than stuff that was already publicly known, if that makes sense.
Terrifying. It's another check mark, though, in the box of they know exactly what they're doing. Yeah, it's not, they're not making mistakes. They're getting caught. And Facebook makes a lot of money. And one way that you could sort of measure, it's like, does my company make a lot of money, right? Like, how do I know if my company relatively makes a lot of money? And here is one surefire way that I'm going to give you. If you get a fine for $5 billion, and that's good news, you make a lot of money.
Facebook stock hits highest price in nearly a year after reports of a $5 billion FTC fine. So I guess everybody was worried that the fine would be more than that. So that's roughly one quarter's profits.
Break out the champagne.
I think they did. $5 billion fine.
Now, a lot of people did argue about this FTC fine and saying it wasn't good enough. I think it's the FTC, like the FCC, is 3-2 Republicans versus Democrats. Mm. And they voted party lines to agree to this. I think Facebook might have written a lot of this. They also, I think this wraps it all up. So there's not going to be, I think there could be more. We don't know the contents of the agreement, but there probably won't be. This will probably be the end of it.
Yeah.
And that, knowing that it's over, is totally worth $5 billion to the Zuck.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not really a lot of money for them. And it's kind of depressing because it was almost like, having done this, it was worth it. Like, the economics of the transaction were, would Cambridge Analytica happen again today? And the economics of this particular situation, yeah, absolutely, why not? It was a profitable, it's like, we rolled the dice and won. Why wouldn't you do that?
PR was bad. Yeah. But they didn't really lose that many users.
Doesn't seem like it.
But they did lose one user. And I'm going to tell you up front, this was clickbait and it got me. Because I don't read these stories as I'm putting them in.
And it's TMZ. How did you not know?
We prune them later. But I saw that and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. It turns out this was as big a nothing burger as it could be. They just caught him in an airport and got a quick quote.
Yeah, so Steve Wozniak was traveling out of the same airport as, I guess, this reporter. And his message for the reporter was, "Get off of Facebook. The privacy concerns scare me." Mostly this is around, Wozniak is convinced that it's listening all the time for mostly anecdotal reasons, and that there's not really a lot of oversight or insight into how the company operates internally. I would say that it's probably true that Facebook is actually listening all the time, if not for personal assistant reasons, just for that marketing data. And listening all the time is not necessarily listening with the microphone. Could be browser data or other types of data. So, yeah, he's not wrong, but there's not any new information here.
Yeah, so. It's good advice.
Yeah.
You should take it. But anybody could tell you that. Maybe you respect the Woz more than your average person. So, if you know what? If that story gets 30 people off of Facebook,
it was worth it.
I'll forgive TMZ for their clickbait bullshit.
Let us know in the comments below. Were you able to show your grandpa or your parents the thing? And then they were like, oh, yeah, I'm going to stop using
grandpa
it.
Grandpa doesn't know who Steve Woz is. Instagram. Now, let's say that you are on Instagram and you're one of these influencers, right? And the last thing that you want to do is anger your followers because you need that sweet influencer money. But you're kind of tone deaf when it comes to social issues, right?
No. A famous person on the internet that's tone deaf? No.
Like, let's say that you're going to, I don't know, film a corpse in a forest. And you don't know that that's a bad idea. Well, Instagram's got your back.
Or carry a camera into the bathroom or, whatever. So The Hill says that Instagram is going to notify users' comments that comments might be offensive before they are posted. So this is not the influencer so much as the person that's commenting on the influencer's stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I imagine it catches the post text as well, right?
I noticed that Twitch was doing it. So, you know, the other day when I was streaming the testing of the Ryzen 3800X, in the title it was like 3800X versus 9900K something 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 F clock something, and Twitch was like, this title's probably offensive, you shouldn't go with this title, it may violate Twitch's terms. And it's like, what?
Yeah, Twitch has definitely fallen to the reds. But I think this would be interesting. Just like, remember that Google had that interface where you could put stuff in and it would give it an offensive rating? Like, I would love to just punch stuff in and see, like, does it think that's offensive? Where's the line and how close can I get to it?
There were some really hilarious things in there where it was just, like, at one point, weren't we putting in completely innocent words and it was like, that's very offensive. It's like, toaster oven. It's like, no, you cannot say that.
Well, you could get, you could just get it close to something bad. And it would, weird things would set it off. I would love to look at the code behind how that's figured out.
It's probably just a big black box of AI. It's like, I don't know. We gave it to 4chan, and then this is what we got back.
Well, here's the thing about Instagram and their influencers. One of the reasons they might be extra concerned about turning people off with their posts and comments is because of this.
Instagram influencer engagement hovers near all-time lows, the study says. Yeah, everybody's gone over to TikTok. I don't know what to tell you.
What is this is like Uncanny Valley. What's going on here?
Like the makeup artist thing?
But that looks like a mannequin.
Makeup artist is a thing on Instagram. I wish Krista was here. She could explain it to us.
That's horrific. So, yeah, it turns out. Now, this is mobilemarketer.com. So, this is not like a news piece. This is a marketing site, news site, who's like, hey, if you're thinking about marketing on Instagram, think again. So they point out that actually people with lower followings get higher in percentage of engagement, but it never breaks 10%.
Yeah.
So if you're paying, if someone has 1,000 followers and you're paying them, you're paying to reach about 90 people.
Join the Level 1 Patreon at patreon.com/level1 and get a new level of personal service. Personal interaction. I don't know.
This story I thought was going to be darkly funny, like the Darwin Award type stuff, but that I'm not sure how much the video factored into it. It turned out just to be sad.
Yeah. Man drowns in lake outside Hyderabad as cousin shoots a TikTok video. So I guess they were trying to shoot a video here. This is kind of a follow-up to, was it last week where it was like Instagram? People are trying to get Instagram pictures, and they're doing all sorts of really just dumb things and getting themselves killed.
It turned out India was the worst place for... It was... you're more likely to die on Instagram than to be eaten by a shark.
Wow. Yeah. And so we thought this was going to be like that, but this, this, like you say, this just ended up being sad.
They did point out that the guy filming swam away to get help. It was like, well, I just dropped the phone, and maybe I don't understand the, the context. But sad. Maybe
warning, you know, to anybody out there in the audience that's trying to build that Instagram following, don't be dumb.
Yeah, but and plus, you know, if let's say that was a sponsored video, he didn't even get any good engagement.
Well, he's world famous now, but
infamous.
Yeah.
And speaking of Instagram influencers, this is a story that is just incredible because it shows that on Instagram,
nothing
it's,
is real.
It's all perception.
Yeah.
Of course, that's true for the most governments as well.
Yeah.
But people will do anything for the perception of a certain thing on Instagram when it is almost never the reality.
Picturesque waste dump with turquoise water now a destination for Instagram photos. You have to see how unnatural looking this water is.
I mean, it does look nice.
So that water is actually caustic to human skin.
It's highly alkaline. Because it is from a, was it a sawmill or a mine or something?
Yeah, it's wastewater.
So there's some kind of chemical that's causing this beautiful color. And they recommend you not actually submerge yourself in it for any reason. But it's, oh, there's the plant. It doesn't look as nice over there, does it? Look how blue it is right there. Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, look at that.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Obviously.
What a great picture.
So, it's terrible. No, this is very bad.
Look at this tree just dying in it. It's like, it should show you something.
But that's just terrible. It's terrible.
When you see an influencer behind that beautiful turquoise water, you might know that their skin is sloughing off at the moment after they're taking these photos. Do you think, now these people, they didn't have to touch the water, but do you think like they fell in or anything?
I think they probably got a little bit of water, but they need to hose off immediately. So,
I didn't know there were more pictures here. Wow.
That's just terrible. Oh, you clicked on it.
Oh, I've gone to Instagram.
No.
That was a mistake.
That was bad.
All right. Well, that's all we got for social media. Tomorrow or Friday will be robots and nonsense.
Woo! See you Friday.